Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanziano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbo. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, I'm doing great, brother. How you doing?
Always making it happen, big man. Today's guest is a former NFL player turned entrepreneur. He is the CEO of Ice Shaker, where he creates premium drinkware products to help individuals live an active and healthy lifestyle. He's appeared on ABC's Shark Tank, where he closed a deal with Mark Cuban and Alex Rodriguez. So without further ado, Chris Gronkowski, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, guys?
All right, so Chris, we want to dive into your story a little bit. Tell us a little bit about going from the NFL to becoming an entrepreneur.
Yeah, for sure. So it's kind of a crazy story. It actually happened and started in my third year in the NFL. 3 years, three different teams, three different cities. That third season was actually, it was a tap on the shoulder when I was in Indy. And I got traded that day. So it moves that quickly where one day you think you're going to be the starting fullback for the Indianapolis Colts. The next day you have a tap on your shoulder and you're getting on a plane flight that same day. You're flying to Denver and they're shipping all your belongings from your house, your car, all that to you in Denver. So at that point, my wife, three different cities, three different job interviews. She was like, I'm just not going to do that anymore. I'm going to find a way to work from home. So she started an online business. I thought it was a terrible idea. I came home one day, she was hand painting wine glasses. She was putting them in the oven. I was starving and I'm like, whatever, as long as you're doing something, I'm cool with it. As long as you're just not sitting around at the house doing nothing. So the year kind of went through and realized that throughout the year as I was playing, she was selling more and more and she had to find a way to scale it up. And pretty soon, she was cranking. She was cranking with this online business. I started diving into it and realized there was something there. So after that year, my contract ended. I had a three-year rookie deal ended. I was looking for a new team, started looking into her business and realized there was something actually pretty big there. We started taking some of the NFL money, putting it into this business, buying commercial-grade laser engravers, and it kind of took off. I ended up signing a one-year deal with the Chargers, went there for about 4 months, got hurt in camp, went back with my wife and just started diving all in on this business. So this was before Ice Shaker. This was fresh out, had zero idea that I was going to be doing this, but it took off.
So your wife is really the brains behind the operation is what we're getting at here.
the first operation, the idea behind the first one. I was kind of the muscle and the grit behind it and just started diving all in on it, 10-hour work days, just doing whatever I could, just took all that competitive juice from sports and athletics and just started firing it into this business. So it took off. It was funny because within 3 years I was actually making more money with that business than I was with my NFL career. So great start, but we became that house on the street where people would drive by and just take photos of it because there was just boxes stacked up. Our whole garage was taken over by product. Our guest bedroom we were laser engraving out of, and people kept calling the cops on us. So the cops finally came over and were like, you got to stop doing this out of your house. We eventually got a place, got employees, and
tyranny. You can't even start a business these days. Come on, guys, let it go.
Chris, how was the? I mean, you said 3 years, like nothing. But how was it? I mean, like you're an NFL player. You're come from a famous family. All of a sudden, you have to hang that up. You've been playing football your entire life. That's your identity. That's what you identify as. Someone who's really competitive. How is it going from that becoming a business person and working with your spouse also? That's a complete 360, hanging out with the bros. Now you're hanging out with the wife and in the garage,
Yeah, man. It was definitely different. At first, you definitely miss football, especially when training camp starts back up. And, you kind of get that what if, what if I try one more time? With me, I did. I did go to a tryout and I ended up actually rupturing my hamstring. I blew it out, would have had to have surgery to repair it if I wanted to continue to play football. So it's almost a blessing in disguise for me that, hey, this is it. This is the ending. You don't really have a chance of going back at this point, move on. So I kind of put it at peace. For me, I also never thought I would make it to the next level. So I always knew that there was something else coming. It wasn't going to last forever. I wasn't the best player in the world. I was blessed to be there and get 4 credited seasons in and get retirement benefits and pension and all that. But still tough. I think I did well because I stayed busy the whole time. It was just grind, 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 wake up early, start working, hit the gym, you know, go back, keep working. So I just kept busy, and that's really what pushed me through those tough times at first.
Chris, you're talking to the pizza guy and the drug rep over here. I used to own a restaurant, and Jake was a pharmaceutical, and now we have, you know, 1,500 apartment units. And what did it take for you to go from the, you know, going into football and becoming an entrepreneur? Can you just tell the listeners some steps that you took that can maybe help them? Because we have a lot of people on the show that are working as W-2 or have single family homes and they want to scale up. What did you do once you were about to leave? It seemed like you got along really well with the wife. You learned a little bit through that business, but what were some of the steps that you took?
Yeah, man, I tell people all the time, I just started small, kind of small side hustle is what both businesses started as. So this is what my wife did, you know, her passion or what she kind of liked doing was, you know, these hand painting wine glasses. So she started doing it and, you know, very small investment, maybe a couple $1,000 to get this business started, and then just kept grinding, putting the money back in, you know, doing it on your free time and just keep building and building and building until you get to a point where, you know, it might be something that is a sustainable business for you. But it doesn't even have to get to that point. You know, you could always have a nice side hustle on the side. You know, fast forward, you know, 5 years in the business with my wife, I then started Ice Shaker. It was the same way. You know, I was going to the gym multiple times a day. I had this passion to make a product that was better for the gym, that would keep my drinks cold, that wouldn't absorb the odor like a plastic shaker did. And it was the same thing. Started as a side hustle. It was out of the upstairs of my house here. Ordered a bunch of bottles, had to carry them up into the upstairs of my house. And I was just doing it on the weekends, you know, going to shows. I was shipping the products out after hours, after I was done working, with my wife, and, you know, just a small side hustle at first that I just kept grinding on until, we ended up getting on Shark Tank and it blew up and became a full-time business overnight.
So you don't just get on Shark Tank. You don't just blow up. Talk about that, the preparedness to go into the show and say, hey, I'm going to have this pitch, because there's a lot of products out there that are similar to yours. How did you differentiate yourself and how did you sell yourself to them to see the opportunity of, hey, I've got a great product here?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I definitely had the benefit of having the NFL background and also a family that was recognizable. So getting on the show was easier for me, for sure. My agent had sent out an email back in 2012 when I was with the Broncos just saying, ABC is actually looking for NFL players. They want to expand their audience. It's all about growing their viewership. So they reached out, and you know, at that time I was like, I love this show. One day I'm going to be on it. But it ended up taking 4.5 years till I had an idea that was worth actually going back and pitching to them. So at that point, I did. I waited till I was about 3 months in. I had about $25,000 in sales. I had a proof of concept, and I reached back out to the show at that point and said, hey, would love to get on the show if possible. They sent back and just said, hey, we need a video submission. Tell us what the product's all about. Tell us why you should be on the show. And I did. I was lucky enough to then get pushed on to the later rounds and end up recording about 3 months later when we were about 6 months into the business. But yeah, I was prepared, 100% prepared. I watched every episode. I wrote down every question. I prepared. I walked out on that stage and everyone said, yeah, were you nervous? And of course you are. I mean, it's a big moment. The lights are on. But at the same time, when you know what's coming, when you know the answers to the quiz, you're prepared and you come off super confident. And that's what happened. You know, we went out there, had the pitch down, knew the questions that were coming, you know, and we had fun with it.
Did your wife go out with you or were you solo?
No. So the second company was, it was all me at that point. So my idea, I invested my money into it. So it was myself and then my brothers came on just to help out with the pitch and also kind of guaranteed that we'd air on Shark Tank if
you can lock it up. Right?
Yeah. So I've had to fly them in and brought them in just for the day. And, you know, when you do a couple,
they weren't getting greedy, right? They weren't like asking for equity just because of the FaceTime, right?
No. So, so yeah, no, they didn't. Rob actually didn't realize that it was a real thing, like that the Sharks really invest real money into it. So he thought it was more entertainment value because I think he'd previously done a show that was similar, that wasn't, you know, really for equity though. So yeah, he almost thought it was like just for TV kind of thing. So no, they didn't ask for equity from me at that point.
Little PR push there. So after you land the deal with the Sharks, what is the implementation like? Are they just giving money and then and saying, hey, all right, Chris, go make it happen? Or is there guidance and then do they have people there that help apply systems and scale to the operation?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the due diligence part is about 3 months. You know, go back and forth. They want to first make sure that everything you said is legit. make sure the company's legit. At that time, a lot of deals actually fall through. They throw a crazy term sheet at you where, you know, if you're established and you're making some good money, there's no way you're going to sign this term sheet. For me, I was 6 months in and, you know, it was a side hustle kind of, you know, passion project at that point. So I, you know, went back and forth with the lawyers, but I ended up signing the term sheet and realized afterwards that it's more about protection for the Sharks than really applying what's on that term sheet. So stuff like, you know, if I want to hire an employee, I got to pass it by them. You know, I realized really quickly that they don't want me to pass by them. Every single employee that I hire, it's just a complete waste of time for them. So a lot of things in there just to protect themselves, I guess, at this point, because they've been doing it for so long. But yeah, the actual implementation of strategy and, you know, coming into your business and kind of telling you what to do doesn't really happen. I wish, I guess, a little bit more of it, but at the same time, I do like the freedom of not being told what I have to do. So the great benefits of it is the fact that you can say that, you know, Mark Cuban's part of your company. That's going to open up doors automatically. The connections and networking is huge. You know, we got into GNC almost immediately. We got onto Good Morning America. We got onto QVC as well.
But how is that happening, though? Is that through their connections? Do they have like a liaison bridging the gap, or is that just you saying, hey, yeah, they do?
Yeah, we have an advisor.
Gotcha.
So I have an advisor. His name's John. And so he's making those connections. He's connecting me to the QVC team. He's connecting me to the GNC buyers.
And is he like an employee of Cuban that kind of guides you through the process? Is that the idea?
For sure. So he's created Mark Cuban Companies, in which there's about 15 employees. They used to do everything from accounting, you know, to advising. And when I came on, it was the first season that they stopped doing the accounting just because it was becoming too much work at that point. So. But yeah, there's some lawyers on staff as well. So if I need some stuff quickly checked over, I could send it over to his team. They'll do that, you know, free. It's not like I'm being charged by him to have some of his lawyers look over some of my stuff every once in a while. So the networking's huge is really what it comes down to as well. Mm-hmm. Being able to reach out and say, hey, I'm starting SMS or email marketing for the first time, or I have a question about working, you know, with this account over here. Is there anyone else in the portfolio that has experience with these people or with this app? And the answer is always yes. You know, someone has, and I'm able to reach out to them and get an unbiased opinion about it. And, you know, it significantly helps from that aspect. And then
what about like scaling coaching though? Cause I'll give you an example. Gino, like you said, was a pizza guy, had one location. I was working for a pharmaceutical company at the time before we came together and started our entrepreneurial venture. We actually had to hire like scaling up coaches and people to teach us good business systems to be able to expand. Is that part of the implementation, or is that really on you to go find that? Because you don't wake up knowing this stuff, right?
No, you don't. It takes years to figure it out too. So we aren't taught that, and that's not something that they're doing. I've reached out to mentors. My dad's been in business for 32 years. He scaled his company up to the second largest distributor of fitness equipment in the U.S., but local businessmen as well here. One of them was the creator and founder of a company called Solo Stove that went public last year for about $2 billion. But I reached out to mentors and just said, hey, what got you to that next level? Because that stuff's important and you don't know it. It takes years and years to kind of realize how to do it and acquire those skills if you're not asking for help.
I want to go back to the pitch. I mean, Jake's a snowballer. He just likes to snowplow and get really ahead and already talk about systems and scaling, making money.
Yeah, we got to get there, Gino. We got to get there, man.
Let me pull it back. I want to pull it back because the pitch is really important because we have investors and people who are syndicating or raising capital for deals, and it really comes down to the pitch. How did you convince people that have probably collective net worths of billions of dollars to invest in a basic startup company with very little sales, and what would that pitch look like?
Yeah, for sure. They actually do a good job of helping you with the pitch. So they want you to show up on the show and do a good job. Mm-hmm. They know naturally that a lot of people are going to show up and not do a good job. So they got to make good TV. So they will come out and really help you with it. And then you actually do the pitch a couple of times before you actually get onto the show. So the producers want to know somewhat what you're going to say, what you're going to do, and then they are going to kind of help you out a little bit as well if it's really bad. If it's good, they just let you roll with it. But So yeah, that definitely helped significantly. I think a lot of it just had to do with the family as well. You know, they are betting on a lot of times the people. And then the product itself, just unique, different, something that has to be scalable as well. So yeah, the pitch for me, it was very simple. I mean, it's a very simple product. We don't have a bunch of new technology. It's a cup. So I think it was very simple to kind of just show them where the path was and how to get to those next steps.
And then when you went to the show, what was your company lacking? What were you looking for from the Sharks?
It was lacking everything at that point. We're 6 months in. I didn't know how to scale. I mean, that was a huge issue. I didn't know how to build a team. I didn't know how to put the processes in place. I didn't even have a budget or a forecast, but I had nothing. And looking back on it, it's like it was a joke is what it was. But they were willing to, just kind of see the hustle and the grind and invest in me, I guess, at that point. And I think a lot of it had to do with just the family name and the exposure that we can bring to the product as well. So, yeah, man, I say it all the time. It took me probably 3 or 4 years to really figure out how to run a business the correct way.
And you're there, you're scaling to 3 million. What was the biggest thing that you could attribute to that scale? I mean, is it the marketing? Is it the systems? Is it the processes that you put into place?
At that point, it was 100% just the exposure from the show is what it came down to. The processes, the marketing, it was all right. But overall, the exposure from the show, and then we just used that to keep rolling. Facebook ads were super powerful at that time. Taking that proof of concept and taking that Shark Tank pitch and then posting and making more ads and driving traffic to all the CNBC articles that came out about it, really just magnified that exposure that we got from the show. Getting offers from all five sharks is a powerful tool as well. So really emphasizing that, and then closing a deal too is pretty pretty impressive. So a lot of people just gravitated towards the product all because of the Shark Tank airing.
Gino, what he's saying is it all comes down to marketing. This is what we're hearing. If you can get your ass out there, you can get the name out there, people will respond, it sounds like.
It at first, and then there's a lot of things that come after that.
You got to be able to fulfill, but if you get the name out there, it's going to help for sure.
Chris, what did your family members say before you got on the show and before this? They're thinking about, what is Chris doing? Is he crazy right now? Does he want to do a business, or what was that conversation around the family table?
Man, I mean, they've known I've always been a grinder. So, going back to college, I'm sitting in class playing heads up poker to make money so that I could party that weekend with it. So, anything.
You gotta find a way, man.
I mean, we wanted to put a hot tub in the backyard during college, so I found a way just play poker tournaments to get it done. So
nice.
I was going to find a way, and I think they kind of knew that as well. The first business was the same way with my wife. It was absolutely crushing. So I think they probably thought I was a little bit crazy, but I think at the same time they knew that I was going to do what it took to get it.
Like, Chris, it's a cup. How are you going to sell a cup? You're like, watch me, right? Watch me.
Yeah, I mean, of course you pull out all the stats of like this company sold for 100 million, whatever, and that was kind of my proof of concept and what I was trying to get to, and I think it was more just the fact that they knew I wasn't going to give up on it.
And I see, I've been on the website. You have a ton of products. How have you been able to continue to scale, add more products, and get more ideas with the company?
Yeah, for sure. A lot of it comes from our customers. So if a customer says, hey, I want this, and then the next one says the same thing, we start recognizing it and saying, hey, let's figure out a way to get that done. So it started with the shaker bottle. People then asked for smaller, so we brought in smaller. They then asked for more of just a tumbler that can hold hot drinks. We bring that in. The colors all come from our customers as well. We do a lot of surveys now. Our post-purchase surveys are awesome. We'll ask about what retailers we should work with. We ask about what partnerships we should do. We ask about what new colors or patterns we should bring in. And a lot of that feedback is what drives what we come out with next. So
are they asking for hot moms now? Because I think we saw something before the show. You want to see, can we see that one? Can we hold that one up to the camera?
For sure. So we're looking to close this deal with Danny Duncan, another big influencer. And this is another great way to actually scale up You don't get in front of it.
For the folks not on YouTube, he's got a shaker that says, I heart hot moms, actually. So.
Yep. So this is a trademarked slogan of Danny Duncan. If you're on YouTube, you probably know Danny. He has over 10 million followers. And we came across Danny at a pickleball event and became friends with him. So partnerships, huge.
What are you doing at a pickleball event, dude?
It was a celebrity pickleball event, so went out there.
Because here's the thing, we're building literally an apartment complex right now, and I don't know shit about pickleball, but everyone's
dude,
like, no, this is the new hottest thing.
To watch that shit.
Hold on. The architect's going, is this one of the nude versions or the one where they wear clothes? I'm like, I don't even know what the hell this shit is. Apparently, there's like this whole community of nude pickleballers, and then ones that are like wear their clothes. So, you know, wherever you're going with it, man, is cool. But like, I just want to hear about this a little bit.
So this bottle might fit in very well with that community.
It's marketing. Always thinking, baby. Always looking to provide value.
I've never heard of the nude one.
That's what our architect was telling us. I didn't either. So
that's pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, it's just now that we're done with sports, we like to compete in different ways now. And like cornhole is big in the family. We play like three in the bucket. So basketball games, stuff like that. And pickleball has kind of been one of the newer things. That we've been playing against each other. So just a sport everyone can play. So we got into it, got invited to a couple tournaments. Ice Shaker does really well in that space as well. So started to dabble a little bit more in pickleball.
Nice.
Chris, what's the hardest part of the business when you started? Because you have fulfillment, you have product sourcing from China, you have marketing, you have customer service, you have employees. What have you found to be challenging over the last few years?
Man, building the team is definitely the biggest thing. Employees. I mean, it comes from someone that, you know, I always did everything myself. So those first couple of years and why I didn't know how to run a business is because I wanted to do every single thing myself. And I felt like I had to be successful. But if you want to scale up, if you want to get to that next level, it's the same thing as sports, which is so funny that it took me so long to realize, you know, there's a head coach, there's assistant coaches, there's players, and you don't do all three. You know, as an athlete, I was just the player. I wasn't coaching as well. So when I got into the business world, it's funny that it took me so long to finally realize that. But the other thing is that,
dude, you don't wake up knowing this stuff though. That's the thing. Yeah. You just don't know. And Gina, what do we call that when someone tries to do it all themselves?
I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to get burned out sooner or later. And I ain't going to scale.
I'm a mentality, dude. 100%.
Yeah, no, for sure. So that was me really until three kids later and a pandemic that forced me to finally say, hey, there's no chance. I physically can't even do it anymore. I can't be at the warehouse. I have three kids. I can't have a babysitter over. You know, I have to figure out a way to actually build a team at this point. And that's kind of when I started putting in a budget, a forecast, a team, an org chart for the first time. Like, yeah. I had none of this stuff. So I finally reached out and said, hey, I need help. And my dad had been trying to help me from day one, and I would just ignore everything he said and thought I could do
it. He doesn't know what he's talking about, right? Come on, Dad. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. Come on, man.
He just has 200 employees, but you know, I thought that was nothing. I finally realized it. The other big thing too was that once you get in the business world, you find out really quickly that, you know, in the locker room, everyone's there for one reason: to win the game. In the business world, a lot of people are just there just to make money, just to get their paycheck. They're there just to show up a lot of times. They're not trying to win a game or you know, be a team player.
They're not all in. Yeah.
Exactly. So you don't realize that until you step out of the locker room and you get into the real world and you figure that out really quickly. So, you know, finding a way to keep people motivated and build a really, you know, a team culture was very difficult at first.
I love that you say that because that's really important. Before we go to short answers, I want to answer that question. I mean, in the real world, it's all about equity and diversity and less being fair. In the real world, it's all about how do we build this thing and who's the best and who's the most appropriate person for this position. For you, for us, our defining moment is when we created core values and a mission statement. That's when all of a sudden everything exploded for us. We have people first, make it happen, extreme ownership, unwavering ethics, and growth mindset. Those are our five core values. And once we did that, we went from 600 apartment units to 1,300 within a year and a half to 2 years. It was amazing what happened, actually. We had clarity. We were about to say, you know what? Here's the culture. You know, it's not my job. Well, then you're not our employee. You're not a great fit for us. Can you point to one or two things that you did in your organization that was like, oh, wow, lights out. I mean, this didn't really, really help the scale.
Yeah, you know, for sure. First off, the budget and forecast was huge because it gave us that direction and it gave us a way to measure it and goals to go against quarterly and yearly. The second thing was something that came from my dad. It was a way to incentivize everyone as a team instead of individuals. So all his top guys, he would put them into almost like a profit sharing. So he would give them a total pot, and it was based along the total revenue of the company. And everyone could see it. Everyone knew what it was. And it was all split if they hit their goals together as a team. So once I started incentivizing everyone as a team, everything changed. The sales team started talking to the fulfillment team and figuring out the best ways to get things done. The fulfillment team started looking up, different ways to package the products and get them out cheaper and find cheaper shipping. And all of a sudden, once everyone was incentivized as a team, I also didn't have to really discipline anyone anymore. It kind of just happens naturally at this point. If someone's not holding up on their end, I could guarantee the other two departments are going to be like, hey, what is going on over here? Because it's affecting their bonus. It's affecting their pay. So that was huge. It was almost an immediate change where the second we put in a plan that required everyone to work as a team to benefit their bonuses, things exploded. We actually 3x'd our profits that year, which was absolutely insane.
Freaking sounds awesome. Like he's got some A players coming out of the woodwork and feeling a little bit more like a team, Gino.
Mm-hmm. Love that.
100%. All right, guys, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
A question Gino and I get a lot is, what's a great value add?
You've just closed a deal and you're looking for a way to maximize the attractiveness of your complex to potential renters.
At Rand Property Management, we start at the bottom, literally. We start with the flooring.
And that means we start with a call to Christian Chapman and his team at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring. No one wants to deal with the expense and hassle of putting in new floors, and that is exactly why we turn to David's Abbey.
David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring provides a quality, long-lasting product at a great price. The wear layer and waterproofing that comes standard with all David Abbey products will ensure you are on solid ground for years to come.
My favorite part of working with Christian and his team is convenience. David's Abbey will direct ship their product anywhere in the U.S. That's white glove service, folks.
And your installation team will love how easy it is to install. The next time that you're looking for a great value add, give our friends at David's Abbey Carpet and Flooring a call and speak with Christian.
Or click the link in the show notes to visit their website today.
All right, we're back. I want to talk about the team currently. What's the size of the organization, feel the team, and describe that a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. We have about 20 employees right now at this point. So, we're still pretty small. I've built out an org chart over the next 3 years to hit about 50 employees. It's kind of the goal or where we think we can get to. It's mostly we do all of our own fulfillment still, and we do our own customization as well. So a lot of those employees are on that side. We completely control it. It's one of our huge advantages that we have over other companies because we turn stuff within 2 to 3 days, sometimes, same day. So custom engraving is huge. We do a lot of logo bottles. We do a lot of one-offs as well, but other companies can't offer that, and everyone waits till the last minute. So if we could turn a couple thousand bottles and get them out within 5 days, that's a huge order that we're going to get that no one else is going to get. Mm-hmm. We have a sales team. Right now we have 5 guys on the sales team. So they're hitting up anyone and everyone really in any space at this point, because a custom bottle can be sold anywhere at this point. It could be a golf outing. It can just be an employee gift. It can be a customer gift. And we have anything from a shaker bottle to a 1 gallon jug down to a 14 ounce, just regular, more of like a sports cup. So we can really touch anywhere and anything. Other than that, we have the marketing team then. So we have about 4 people in our marketing team at this point. And then you got me. I'm kind of the jack of all trades and need to take a lot more off my plate and probably hire about another 3 people. But
Dude, the biggest mistake that we made in the business was not hiring soon enough and not enough people. So definitely get the folks in the door for sure.
What I would do, Chris, is I would look up a gentleman named Dan Martell. We just interviewed him last week. He's going to be on the Jake and Gino show. And he talks about the buyback principle, being able to buy back your time. You're at that point right now where you have to start buying back your time, these tasks that you need to start getting off, whether having an executive assistant, whether having a full-time bookkeeper, whether having accounting in-house, whether having editors, whatever that looks like. You're at that point right now that things are starting to make sense. So I would check out Dan Martell.
No, absolutely. That's where I'm at. I actually, to start the year, I took every task that I'm doing. I wrote them all down and then I said, hey, who should be doing these tasks instead of me? When I did that, I pulled out about three different full-time jobs that could be done at that point. And I've hired one so far at this point. So there's probably another two that I have to hire. It just, I want to make sure I get these people in the door, get them trained right, and have
onboarded
all the
properly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, dude, you're going to get a couple customers from this show because my wife typically leaves the house with 4 to 6 drinks in her hand, and it makes me absolutely disgusted, but, like, I watch it happen. So I'm going to stick her with an I Love Hot Moms mug so she can take that to the gym because I want her to be uncomfortable with what she's doing. So you can't get them too comfortable, right, Gino?
That's right. It is.
You can definitely hold 6 in your hand, too, with this handle. I've done it before.
I'm sure she'll find a keychain or something for it. So going back to the scale a little bit, what did you hire any coaches, or was it, you know, you sat down with Pops and said, hey, I got to figure this shit out. How do I scale this thing? Like, what was that inflection point when you really started to ramp up, and what did you take away from it?
Yeah, for sure. So it was meeting first with the founder of Solo Stove and saying, hey, what took you to that next level? And his first thing was, you know, what's your budget and forecast? How much are you going to make this year?
You're like pulling Lynn out of your pockets.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah. And so I talked to him about it and I was like, I have no clue. And so I went home and I started researching how to actually create a budget and a forecast. And I had no clue. So I called up my dad and I said, Dad, how do you create a budget and a forecast? At that point, he sent it over to me and he was about 4 years into his business when he had a consulting firm come in and teach him how to do it.
Nice.
He said it was the most expensive 2 days of his entire life, but probably the most important 2 days that he's
biggest
ever.
Biggest ROI that he got, though. Yeah.
Absolutely. So after 2 days, he kicked him out. He said, I can't afford this anymore. This is ridiculous. But they created these different pillars in his company. One of the big things with him was he's selling fitness equipment.
Is he manufacturing or distribution?
Distribution.
Gotcha.
A little bit of manufacturing at this point, but it was all distribution up until probably the last about 5 years. So with that, like, their big thing was they were losing a ton of money on free shipping. All their sales reps would say, hey, we'll deliver it, install it for free. So, you know, the consultants came in, they started breaking down each department. You know, he had a service department, he had sales, he had shipping. It had to kind of break down each thing into profit centers and loss centers. I thought it was absolutely crazy when he was first saying it, but once he started really breaking it down to me, it made perfect sense. You know, for our fulfillment team, they're obviously not a profit center, they're a loss center, but how do you minimize those losses? You know, for the sales team, obviously it's a profit center. How do we maximize that? With marketing, how do we maximize it? So I then started breaking down each thing into different pillars and then putting a budget, assigning a budget to it, and then figuring out what the profit and loss for each one should be. And it was eye-opening because where I thought I was making all my money wasn't the case at all. Once you really broke it down, a lot of it was coming from these custom-engraved bottles that we're selling in bulk. You know, the expense there and the profit there was huge because, you know, you're selling thousands of units at a time instead of spending marketing dollars on, you know, a single sale through your website. So I thought the margin on the B2C stuff was great. Come to find out, you know, really that B2B stuff was really what was generating all of our profits. Mm.
That's awesome. Great, man. So where can I go to get my Hot Moms shaker and all these other great products? And how can listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, we can't hype up the Hot Moms one too much yet because it's going to be a little bit of time until we
get
that.
We're hyping. We got to build that anticipation, man. All right? They can't have it. They can't even have it yet. We're creating desire, right?
You are good at marketing. I like this. No, so we're everywhere now at this point. So we're in all the GNCs, we're in all the vitamin shops, we're in all the Lifetime Fitnesses, all the 24-hour fitnesses. Looks like we'll go into all the Sprouts in May here. So about 400 Sprouts grocery store locations. Looks like HEB is a big player that's going to come in. We do hit the hardware space. A lot of the Do It Best locations we're in as well. So we are in half the Walmarts too. We do have 2 SKUs in the sporting goods section at Walmart as well. Other than that, online is going to by far have our best selection. We have over 150 different SKUs at this point. And then, of course, everyone loves Amazon.
What's the site, though? So if we want to go direct online, what's the website?
So it's iShaker.com. So you're looking for the newest stuff or you're looking for customized bottles, come to our website and check that out.
iShaker.com. Gino, you ready for this? You ready to shake it?
I can give the recap, Jake. I would say you got a young Chris Gronkowski sitting in a hot tub playing poker, trying to make some bucks.
Now, that sounds like fun. College. That's where the hot moms were, okay? You know he was pulling them in, right?
And from there, he goes to play college, and he just gets talk about the grind. Four different teams in 4 years, you know, blowing out your quad and just saying, I can't do this anymore. And all of a sudden, he sees his wife making a ton of money going, hold on a second, what's she doing here? I need to reinvent myself. And lo and behold, Pops has got 200 employees. And he's not even talking about it. Pops is the one who could really help him out. But he's like, Pops don't know nothing. And then when it gets down to it, he goes to get Mark Cuban to get a deal for him. And then he figures to himself, holy crap, I have people. I need to scale. And there's only two ways you can learn. It's either in the classroom or on the streets. And on the streets, it's a lot more expensive, and it takes a lot longer to do it. And, I mean, it's been an awesome story to talk about marketing, sales, budgeting, stuff that you didn't know 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. And it's amazing the growth that you've been able to do and all the different areas that you're in. And what I'll do is I will get Jake to take a couple pictures of him naked playing pickleball for you so he can get it over into the
Dude, nobody wants to see that space. Shit, all right? Dude, no, this is great. That gang.
That was a great summary.
that about sums it up. No, really, really appreciate the time today. Gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He's the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. Chris, great job today. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me, guys.